right. Lynn loves this song, but I know you want to play it all the way through, but I want to remind people that we're actually here. Good evening, everyone. It is Tuesday, May the 14th, 2024. It's the Fakeologist Show. It's also the Lynn Artel Show right at the same time. And that's Faith No More. And Introduce Yourself. Is that the name of the album or the song? No. Go ahead, Lynn.
I don't know. I don't know what the name of the album is.
Okay. It says here, Introduce Yourself. So is that... But the song is We Care A Lot.
Who says Introduce Yourself?
The cover art of this video you sent me.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the screen cap here. It says Faith No More, Introduce Yourself. And I think it's a picture of... I don't know what it's a picture of.
I don't know why you cut the song short.
It's 4 minutes long, and I wanted to get the show going.
Okay.
You want to hear the rest?
Play it at the end. Cue it up at the end.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll finish the thing at the end, but we gotta get the show going. You have a lot to say. This isn't a music show, you know.
Well,
I know it's important.
You know, I'm about art and culture.
Yeah, so, you are.
Right. I'm about Kulturkampf, which is culture war.
All right. How you been? How's your week been?
I mean, this is not. Let me put it this way. Just to use an allegory or metaphor, I don't know.
All right. I figure
this
if
is,
anyone,
this is
you
not,
know
this is not, right. This is not Patty Steer's version of Fakeology. Okay. We already know what her version of alternative cosmology or flat earth is.
Yeah.
And she that is old. To avoid saying anything of substance about the content and instead turn it into a social club.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And that was her
flat earth and hot potatoes.
Hot potatoes. And then they went on to do the baby flat earther or baby truthers. Right.
Oh, okay. I must admit.
The idea being to debase and degrade and humiliate their audience into infantilization. Basically, they're infantilizing their audience. Well, first they turn them into adolescents and then they infantilize them. So.
Was she an op?
She came out of media. She came out of radio. She admitted she had a background in media. And every time I would tune in, it was so frustrating because I didn't want to deal with this flat earth stuff anyway. I have an open mind about it, but to me, the issue is NASA's hoaxing us. That's what's important. We can prove that now. We can't prove the earth is flat now. It's like, you know, it's so obvious to me. But I would tune in to these YouTube videos. It's like Jaron would be on there, Mark Sargent. Some of the others, you know. And I'd say, okay, when are you guys going to talk about flat earth? 5 minutes.
Right,
10 minutes.
Yes, I remember that now.
Have you ever tried to listen to one of Patty's, watch or listen to one of Patty Steer's videos on flat earth? They never talk about flat earth, which is to say, they never discuss the science or cosmology. They talk gossip. They talk social media influence.
You're totally right.
It is so right. Well, that's if you tuned in for that, turn us off. Turn me off. That's not what we're about here. Because we care a lot. And it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it. And that's the theme for me for tonight, because someone tuning in here for the first time, you know, what are these people obsessed with? What are they preoccupied with? Right? Like, why do we do this shit? It, to remind yourself that Faith No More recorded that song in, I guess it was 1991 or 1992. It's been that long. And yet the sentiment is fresher than ever. Why do we do this, right? Like JLB is always asking that. You know, that's how he came up with his paywall idea, right? Or Dave. Yeah,
he only wants serious people to talk to, yeah.
And I really want you to bring Viking Helga back, because I love the way she cut to the chase on it. She says, why do you people care? You've got to decide what matters and what doesn't in your life. You've got to be a mature adult and decide your priorities in a somewhat sometimes dangerous environment. She's living down there in Brazil. I don't know what she's got to contend with, but why does it matter? Does it matter? First, convince me it matters. You know, I've reached a point now where when I'm out there and anyone brings up, if we're talking trifles and trivia, I don't care. But anyone who brings up a subject I consider serious, the first thing I'll ask them is, well, do you really care about this? Or is this just cocktail party bullshit small talk? Now, philosophically speaking, we're talking about something very basic in the history of our civilization that goes back. Well, I think about the dialogues of Plato and the character of Socrates. Now, some people think Socrates may be a mythical character. I think he really exists because Socrates is to the dialogues of Plato the way Jesus is to the gospel in the New Testament. His presence is always there in all of these dialogues of Plato. And so it's been hypothesized that he's a hypothetical character that Plato may have invented. But I don't believe this. And the reason why is because other writers before and after, at the time of contemporary with Plato and after Plato, such as the playwright Aristophanes, make fun of Socrates, talk about Socrates. So there are so many references and so many different sources to Socrates, and I'm convinced he was a real individual who lived in Athens and taught, ran an academy, had a following among young men in Athens. And I know someone in your audience is going to say, well, Socrates, wasn't he a pedophile? And I will respond, no, there's no evidence that Socrates was.
Didn't we talk about that? Pedestry?
Right. He was a pederast, not a pedophile.
Pederast. Right. And we talked evidence, about that.
Right. The evidence we have for that is mainly in Plato's, one of his Plato's surviving dialogues, the Symposium, which is about a dinner party among very prominent Greek aristocrats in Athens that included the Alcibiades, a young rising political star and admiral and general in Athens, and an older Socrates trying to, or one of them is trying to seduce the other. That's part of, and they get into a discussion of what is the nature of love. And part of that gets into homoeroticism and all that. But that's worth your time if you want to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
What is the essence of Socrates' philosophy? Because it's a lot more important than what's up your butt or what's between your legs. It's what's between, it's what's between your ears.
Right.
That's what's important to Socrates. He really didn't care about the rest. In fact, in the symposium, Alcibiades, who was like a hero, you know, a legend in Athens, and the younger individual, he's trying to seduce Socrates, who was somewhat older, was always considered fantastically ugly, the ugliest man in Athens. And Socrates simply doesn't respond. He's completely detached. And that's because he has an intellectual view of this stuff. And that emerges in other dialogues of Plato, where Socrates essentially says that the unexamined life is not worth living. The unexamined life is not worth living. Whether you believe in a divine creator, an architect of the universe, we were clearly designed to think and to question. This is what Descartes says in his Meditations and his Discourse on Method. Cogito ergo sum. He begins by saying, I doubt, therefore I am. And concludes that doubting is the process of thinking. And that's how I know something is going on. Cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. And Socrates is saying, unless we examine and analyze and look at life and its experience, that life is really not human. It's not worth living. That's a very high standard to hold up. And that's how the Greeks were. They were very competitive. Because the average schmuck out there, he's working so many hours a day. He wants to go home, turn on the television, I don't know, watch the NBA or the NFL or Friends or Cheers or Seinfeld. We can get into Seinfeld later if you'd like.
Oh, well, I got to watch that.
Well, movie. the walkout at Duke was like 30 people. It was completely.
No, I got to watch the show Unfrosted.
Someone yeah, I never watched it. I couldn't sit through 5 minutes of it because of the sound, the laugh track. I can't stand watching those things and having an artificial laugh track where people are laughing at stuff that's not funny. I got to turn it off. But Seinfeld, the characters always annoyed the hell out of me. It was too didactic and preachy. Preachy is what I could never stand it. But I would come into work, you know, the morning after, and everybody be in the coffee room or around the water cooler, whatever, eating their breakfast at work. And they'd all be talking about, did you see Seinfeld last night? I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. So that's how out of touch I am. By the way, guess who made his first $1 million as a producer of Seinfeld? You'll never guess this.
No.
Steve Bannon.
Oh, wow.
Right. Number one, you know, MAGA Trump guy. I understand he turned up today or yesterday for his their contempt of Congress charges against him, where they're saying they're going to stage an arrest and lock him up for refusing to testify.
The charade goes on, huh?
Yeah, this guy produced Seinfeld. One of the producers made a lot of money off of it. Well, why do we care? Well, because the unexamined life is not worth living, according to Socrates.
Right.
And that's what makes us human. Now, the question is, there's so many things to explore. We don't want to be like the cat following a laser pen. You ever had one of those laser? I love that.
Yeah.
As a cat toy. You know, I love cats because they're so freaking intelligent. And they're so curious. Dogs are curious, too.
I made one throw up tonight on my walk.
Oh, a cat.
I gave him a treat. Then he walked away and barfed and came back and wagged his tail at me. I apologize. I think the treats went bad over the winter.
You got to work on that. Hold out your hand.
Either that or he has a weak stomach.
Well, you got to let him get used to your scent. Dogs and cats, it's all about your smell.
He ate it off my hand.
Okay. He must have been hungry. Is this a stray cat?
No, it's a neighbor's cat on my walk circuit.
I mean, did he look healthy and well fed? You know, I hate to see
cats. He's fine. But last year I did the same thing and he threw up. So I think he doesn't like beef.
Well, that's what makes us human. Our love for the canines and the felines. They're like us in some ways. What do we admire in them? The traits that we admire in ourselves. Loyalty. Well, dogs, of course. Nobility. Yeah. Courage. Dogs are courageous. Loyalty. No one will stand beside you in a street fight like a dog. A dog will die for you. So much more noble than humans. Humans will stab you in the back. Humans are cowardly. I mean, you know, really.
Yeah.
And cats. Oh, cats are so intelligent. So clean. Cleaner than any human. You know that. Really, more hygienic than any human, cats, but more curious most of the time. There are stupid cats, there are stupid dogs, but you know, not as much as stupid humans. Stupid dogs and cats, they tend not to survive, you know. But I used to have a cat, so smart. But anyway, that's priorities, should be a priority in your life because that's.
I'm allergic to them. I'm anaphylactic, so I can't live with them. Sorry. And by the way, just a show note, I've got FacoTube running. It wasn't running. I had to reset the key. So FacoTube is back up. And I've dropped Odyssey. I don't think anyone uses Odyssey. So now I have both YouTube channels streaming. So if you missed last week's YouTube shutting down and had to move to the backup YouTube channel at shortfake.com/YouTube2 or shortfake.com/YouTube3. They're both running tonight and I will have to delete the videos when the show is over. Not that Lynn says anything offensive, but it may be offensive to YouTube. So I just delete it anyway.
You might.
I don't know what's not.
Well,
so hopefully
it's
the,
it's uh, you, Oh, it's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it, even if we offend.
Hopefully FakoTube is running for you. That's a little sluggish for me, but FakoTube is our own platform. So we'll upload the video tonight to FakoTube. It's going to take a little longer since it didn't start till later. So I'll have to get it from my other backup source. And one other show note before we keep going with Lynn. And that is I got about 250, I would say, text messages from the No Agenda ad that we put up. Which is pretty good. That means I have 250 phone numbers that I promise not to abuse. So I sent them all a message back saying thank you for acknowledging our advert. So that's pretty good reach. Obviously, the reach is much greater, but 250 people took the time to send a text message back. And I think I even had a phone call and a new Discord member come off the No Agenda advert. So that's pretty cool. And so carry on, Lynn.
Well, I mean, why does it matter? Why am I curious? Why am I even obsessed with this stuff? And I admit that a lot of it I am, definitely. Like the whole thing about the dogs that don't bark. The people who obviously are intelligent enough to know better or close enough to what's happening, especially in media or in politics, to know what's really going on, but they play along with it. They prop up lies or they just don't say anything. The dogs that don't bark. You know, the photographs that aren't there for some horrific event that we should have all kinds of pictures for, you know. Why am I curious about this and why am I obsessed with it? So people will say, well, it's intended to program us to absorb our attention, or they call it loosh, because we're supposed to go down these rabbit holes. And at any given point, if someone thinks I'm unduly fixating on a particular rabbit hole and I'm getting trapped in it, they should pretend there's a leash and a collar attached to me, because I'm one of these dogs that likes going down those, like a dachshund. You know, they were bred by the Germans, I think, to hunt badgers. And I'm going down that hole fighting with that badger, and someone saying, no, that's not an important thing. That's low-hanging fruit. They need to yank on my leash, you know. And why I'm obsessing about it, maybe I'm obsessing about it for the wrong motives, for old grudges I might have, or ideological baggage. And this is where I get into this question of dogma and dogmatism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's take the case of, randomly, I'm going to pick this out, Gaza. And the exhaustive and exhausting plethora of videos that Fake Nukes Phil has been reviewing for months now, and microanalyzing, and also his work on other subjects where he analyzes visual, photographic, and video material.
Mm-hmm.
And people will say, well, you know, we're sick of hearing about Gaza. Are people getting sick of the Gaza narrative, do you think?
I think the public isn't, and even the truthers like myself, I'm sick of it.
Well, they should be sick about Gaza. They should be sick of Gaza.
Definitely sick of it.
Our work should make them feel even sicker about it, because it's so phony and so fake, and there's so much naked, transparent, stupid emotional manipulation going on. And all you've got to do is watch a handful of these videos that Phil is looking at, and especially the music soundtrack behind them. And
I didn't even listen to the music. I didn't even know there was a soundtrack.
Oh, you turn off the sound when you watch them. Is that right?
Well, no, I'm watching his videos, and is there sound?
No. The ones coming out of Gaza have a musical soundtrack in the back.
Okay.
Oh. Well, no, he posts them on his... Oh, you're only getting Phil talking about...
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at
his... I'm talking about the videos themselves.
Okay.
I analyze them on my own, you know. Right?
Oh, I did not know. Okay.
Well, he's making them available to us, so I'm looking at them and watching them. Are you telling me you've never taken note of the pop music soundtracks behind these videos of these crying, suffering Palestinians in Gaza.
Well, I guess I haven't thought about them much. I'm busy focusing on the visual. So you're paying attention to everything. Good.
Oh, yeah, because the soundtrack is the giveaway.
Okay.
Let me show you something here that that would illustrate the problem we have with why these nobodies in BitChute, who have been around for a long time. I mean, what they're saying is, well, we've been good, faithful national socialists for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, isolated, cyber herded over here at BitChute or Gab or whatever platforms we're allowed to be on. And here
we're
comes
talking about his cyber stalker.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and they're all upset because Phil's saying, hey, guys, I know you've got a fixed narrative, and that narrative is Jews bad, anybody against the Jews is good, these poor Palestinians must really be suffering, the Jews are really massacring them, blah, blah, you're messing up our narrative, right?
Right.
Really, like, of course they're going to resent that. Because Phil is messing up an established white nationalist or neo-Nazi narrative, principally restricted to BitChute, Gab, and a handful of other platforms. And their ideological baggage crowds out their perception of real details that prove that these videos are sloppily executed fakes. And the music soundtrack behind them is a dead giveaway because it's so inappropriate. It just doesn't, it's cringy, cringy. It just doesn't belong. You don't put Arabic pop music behind videos of what are supposed to be suffering and dying people in Gaza if it's real, unless the whole thing is a big joke. Of course, I know the white nationalists are going to claim that it's the Israelis who are producing these videos. And that may well be, but Phil's point is that both there are obviously Palestinians on the ground who are in on it with the Israelis in waging this propaganda war. But these dogmatic white nationalists, for lack of a better term, I hate that term. I would rather show respect for people and call them pan-European. But I don't know what the term white means. I mean, are Sicilians white?
Yeah, well, white.
I mean, are Greeks white? Come on, that's ridiculous.
I agree. I think, honest, I think white is code for Christian.
Say it's code for European.
Okay.
It's even bigger than that. Not all Europeans are Christians. Sorry. I think it's code for European.
Okay.
But yeah,
I think it's code for Christian, and I think
I'll tell you this.
Okay.
When I'll grant you this, when it's deployed, here's where you're right. Here's where you're spot on. When it is deployed in a propagandistic way by Zionists or Jews, especially left-wing Jewish social engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Like Barber, Lerner, Specter. When the term white is deployed in that way, you're absolutely right. It is coded language for Christian. It is. When the whole dispute over Christ is king, do we want to get into that? I bet we're... people in the chat room?
No, I don't want to talk about that. And you know what? You must have heard... I think it's just... I think it's you said don't say Judah. I think it's the Judeans versus the Christians. And I think Jim Rizzoli said that on yesterday's Walk and Talk. Like, Jim is a very straight up sort of, he's not an eloquent person like yourself, but he gets to the point and he doesn't cite anything. He says, I just know. And that's why he got into the conflict with E. Michael Jones, because E. Michael Jones wants footnotes. But Jim just says, I just know. And he got into, it's just Judeans versus Christians. That's all that's all it is. In the communist way against sort of the capitalist way. just to boil it down. I don't know. Did you hear that walk and talk?
Oh, yeah. At Rome versus Jerusalem.
Yeah, maybe.
Right,
yeah.
Of course. It's Rome versus Jerusalem for a long time, but maybe they're in on it together.
Right. Yeah, of course.
It's a directed dialectic. It's controlled.
Yeah.
I just posted a link.
T-Latte says she's not bored, or he says, or she says, they're not bored at all.
Okay, good, good. Let me continue down this path then. I just posted a link in the private chat.
Yeah.
I'd like you to bring up this picture or even play the video.
Okay.
Of well, this
I hope the video plays. Okay. Truthpodium.org.
Yeah, whatever.
What is this? This is another.
That picture alone should be enough.
Is that another video platform? Interesting.
Who knows? But you can play a minute or two of the video so people get the drift of. Watch what she does with the head and the neck of this rubber mannequin.
Yeah, sorry. It's just just kind of buffering again. I think that's something wrong with my end. It's not the video site. There's just something wrong with this Yandex browser. So I'm going to bring it up in another browser. And hold on a second. I'll share that browser. Maybe
now, are most of our listeners watching the video? Because this is another with Phil. You know, you got to get visual, obviously, right? I mean, come on, you got to look at this stuff. And these white nationalists are not even looking at it. They're not even looking at it, really. They can't be, because they're not seeing what I'm seeing. But go ahead.
No, I'm gonna bring it. I'm gonna have to just play it another browser. Just give me a minute while I queue it up.
Well, let me tell you how I came across this particular video. I went looking on BitChute at the video material that's been posted by someone called, well, it's a site. It's a BitChute channel called Ancon's Reich. Ancon's possess it. Ancon, apostrophe S. Somebody's using the name A-N-D-K-H-O-N, apostrophe S, Ancon's Reich. Obviously, his personal vision of the third
Reich. I'm playing it now. Okay. Obviously, a mannequin.
Right! Has she rolled the head around yet?
It's gone back and forth.
Watch her roll the head around like 360 degrees. It's ridiculous.
What language is that?
Well, that would probably be the Brazilian version of Portuguese. Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
Brazil was a Portuguese colony. They speak I guess a version of Portuguese. You know who would know a lot about this is Amon Rai.
I don't know.
If he's out there, because I think he lived in Portugal. So he could probably translate what's being said here, but it doesn't matter really. I mean, so look, you know, where did I find this? I found this on Ancon's Reich. BitChute channel, and he thinks
it's real. I got
yeah, and all his buddies are chiming in with racial comments about these Brazilians.
So this must be the troll army. This must be like Phil says it's Hasbro. I guess what is that?
Hasbro is the Israeli term for disinformation. Well, I should say for counterintelligence.
Oh, okay.
Media propaganda here in America, where they control a newspaper, where they put out propaganda, that's Hasbro. It's basically Zionist propaganda in the diaspora, not in Israel itself. They got to peddle a different line in Israel itself. But in the United States, in the UK, in Europe, they conduct Hasbro. And they hire mainly Christians or non-Jews to do it, of course.
Okay.
So the point I'm making here with this video is
it's fake.
Yeah, and it should be obvious. Right. It should be obvious.
Obvious fake.
Right. And so what these white nationalists. I hate calling them that. Or, I don't know, wannabe national socialists, whatever. Ideologically driven. They really need to do their homework. See? Now, why are they getting all up in Phil's face about this? Because I have my disagreements with Phil.
Yeah.
On issues of race. And I think he's dogmatic about some things. But that's beside the point. Whatever ideological baggage Phil might be bringing to the party, that's completely separate and independent from his forensic analysis, deconstruction, right? And explanation of the fakery, obvious, transparent, manifest, sloppy fakery in these videos coming out of Gaza. And he's throwing that is the turd in the punch bowl. Well, I say it's the feast at the table, and you guys should get your forks and knives out and start digging in, or else you're being played. You know, I shouldn't be surprised at this. You're familiar, and this has consistently happened over the years. I've been so disappointed. Like, you talk about E. Michael Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
Or David, or, well.
Well, he's almost dead. You can't talk about him anymore.
Yeah, but Jim and Diane expressed exactly my view, my feelings about our disappointment in David Irving's susceptibility to some patently ridiculous story about Jews being gassed in a barn. David Irving should have known better. And Jim Rizzoli was saying, hey, you know, like David Irving, he's a world-class intellectual. He should have known this better.
And, well, maybe he was paid not to know it better.
Well, I don't think that's... Well, I'm going to give David Irving the benefit of the doubt and say he's just old. He's really old. You know, he's getting soft in the head.
I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
You never do. You're just so...
No, I'm not.
But giving... let's take the case of Kevin Barrett. He's another one of these erstwhile intellectuals. And he knows a lot of this shit is fake, but he doesn't care because he's a Muslim. And all that matters to him is advancing his religion, his ideological agenda. So that the fakery really, if this is fake or this is real, he doesn't feel compelled by any of that, really. Doesn't bother him. If his own side produces fakery, he's not gonna call it out. Why should he? He's got a double standard. Because he's carrying ideological baggage. When we point that out, we're being offensive. It's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it. Professor Kevin McDonald, you want me to go through all the intellectuals, all the people who would have been my professors, whose work I read and studied, and who have disappointed me? You want me to tell you about going to a 9/11 truth meeting down in Silver Spring, where celebrity truther Webster Tarpley showed up, and about a dozen of us had to sit around him in a circle trying to explain to him that Sandy Hook was a drill and wasn't a real killing, that nobody died and nobody cried.
Really? You actually confronted the guy?
And you should have seen his face. I wish I had a video of that. This is already back in...
Is he still alive?
Nah, who knows? He's probably very sick. I don't know. Who knows? But... Yeah, he did valuable work in uncovering all the drills and simulations and exercises. 9/11 synthetic terror made in the USA. Well, guess what? Sandy Hook, synthetic terror. Did anybody die? I would have thought Webster had already come across Jim Fetzer's work on this.
Right.
Which all the other truth. I was so gratified to be in a group of 9/11 truthers who were hip to Sandy Hook and the drills and the crisis actors.
What year was that?
Oh, that's been about 2010, 2011.
Oh, wait. Sandy Hook was what year?
Oh, no, that's right. Sandy Hook. Ray, you're right. Sandy Hook was 2013, 2014. Sandy Hook would have been 2013, and then the Boston Marathon was 2014. Is that right? Because Sandy Hook.
I would say Sandy Hook was 2012.
Okay, 2012, and right. So this would have been after Sandy Hook. Not that long after.
Yeah, because, December 14th, 2012.
Right, but before Trump. Trump wasn't even on the horizon.
No.
So this would have been, Well, you know, somebody's house in Silver Spring, a lot of food. We had about 40 people crowded into this living room. Webster was a star, but here we are. And, you know, he did his thing. And here we are trying to explain this to him, and he's shaking his head. And can you imagine how disappointed I was in him that we should have to?
So he was adamant that it was real.
Well, no, he was so confused. When he walked into that room and sat down, but before he left, we probably messed his head all up. I think of Professor Kevin McDonald, publisher of the Occidental Observer, which I know you must look at once in a while because it deals all about whiteness. It's all about whiteness.
No, I don't. I've never even heard of it.
I wonder why I always get an email from Fakeologist with a link to the Occidental Observer.
Where?
In my mail. I'm going to forward it to you from now on and ask you where it's coming from.
Okay.
Because it says it's coming from Fakeologist, and I don't know who at Fakeologist.
No, you have I gave you an email address, lynn@fakeologist.com.
Well,
and that forward, so somebody might have signed you up for something.
I was already subscribed, but yeah, maybe that's good. I don't know.
I never heard of it.
But Kevin McDonald,
Observer?
Look, Kevin McDonald is such a distinguished intellectual that he was given awards by Jewish organizations for his work, A People That Shall Dwell Apart, Separation and Its Discontents.
I've got it on the screen here.
Oh, the Jewish establishment was giving him all kinds of awards. And then when he produced a culture of critique, oh my God, then all of a sudden he's an anti-Semite. So
I never heard of this before, so this is news to me.
This is the most preeminent intellectual in that movement.
Who's behind it? You think it's another controlled opposition?
This guy's been around for a long, long time. He's an academic. He taught at the University of Wisconsin, I believe. Madison, Wisconsin. Very old. He's my age, actually. My generation, pretty much. A little bit older, maybe. He's up there with Fetz. I mean, he's a professor. Come on. They couldn't fire him. He had tenure.
It's Kevin McDonald?
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard the name.
And you tell me you've never heard of him?
No, I've heard the name. I think John Friend might talk.
Yes, of course. John Friend would be up on this. Yeah.
What happened to John Friend? I haven't heard from.
You should bring him back and bring who's the Italian guy you had on with him that was arguing that the Jesuits.
Oh, Giovanni.
Yeah, the Knights of Malta and the Jesuits and all the church. Yeah, they said they had. I like that. I like that discussion. I thought it was fantastic.
I got told I shouldn't side with somebody.
But here's my problem. An otherwise brilliant intellectual, someone who I've been reading for years, and whose views on culture, race, and evolutionary group survival strategy, because he is a Darwinian. I know. It's a mark against him. He's a Darwinian. I think Fetzer's a Darwinian, too.
I wouldn't know.
Well, these people haven't moved beyond Darwin, but Professor Kevin McDonald, he's clueless about fake events and faked deaths. How can
is he really, or is he just not going to talk?
He is. The George Floyd thing, you know, I always put out those two pictures of the two different actors.
You're too kind to these people.
You think they're in on it? Well, they have an investment.
Okay, of course.
They have a career investment in this stuff.
They've dismissed it out of hand.
They are blinded by ideology.
They're blind on purpose, is my point.
You think they know what they're conscious of, then they're liars. That makes them liars.
Well,
That's what Phil would say. Phil would
you
say
you can't do this research for this long and not have heard of it.
That's what I thought when we confronted Webster Tarpley.
Of course, you're right.
But man, if you'd have seen the look on his face and his expression.
Yeah, because now he's got to deal with it. You put it in his face. What is he going to do?
He didn't want to think about it. It was so.
I know. He's going to stick his fingers in his ears and yell, la, 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 la.
Well, he couldn't quite do that because
Greg
we outnumbered
Kevin
him.
Kevin has been on germ warfare.
Let me tell you something. I was so grateful that not a single 9/11 truther in that group disagreed with me about anything I said concerning Sandy Hook and how phony it was. They all were up. They had all seen, well, there were a lot of great videos that came out. We don't give people credit for the great work that was done on Sandy Hook.
Well, the best one was Sophia Smallstorm.
Hers was good. Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, 5 dimensions. That was great.
Yeah.
Right. She's we need to talk about
the capstone event. Yeah, we need to talk about it. I don't think I finished watching
Independent
that.
Media Solidarity Collective did a great job. That's so many. Red Silver Jay. Oh, boy, they shut him down right away. But Red Silver Jay was producing short, punchy videos on YouTube, and then they censored him. They killed him.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, so you know something?
You got a caller, Lynn.
Hold time, 15 seconds.
Hey, caller, where are you calling from, and what's your name?
Willard from Florida.
Of course. Sorry, I should have said Willard.
I know Willard. I got your email, Willard, and yeah, go ahead, get to it.
Hey,
turn down your radio because you're going to get mixed
up. Yeah, that's what I was doing. Yeah, that's what I was doing. I got it. There's two people I wanted to get your takes on. One was Hunter Thompson. You know, you mentioned these people, they're invested in their persona, I guess. And after a while, when you do this stuff, you got to know what's going on, but you don't go there. But Hunter Thompson was one fellow, Lynn, that I wanted to get your take on. You know, have you ever heard this word propinquity?
That's a propinquity?
Yeah, propinquity.
Propinquity. Is that from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
No, but it means like nearness or closeness. But, you know, here's a guy.
Oh, right. The Latin prefix means propia, which means close to ownership or closeness to something. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know, here's a guy that was in Louisville, Kentucky in high school, and he went to high school with Porter Bibb, who went on to Yale and founded Rolling Stone magazine and did Altamont, and Hunter Thompson hung out with him, I mean, in high school.
We call that locality of reference.
Okay.
It's more than a synchronicity, it's a locality of reference. Common address.
Okay, yeah, regiment. Yeah, because he goes on to be a security guard at Esalen, you know, Esalen before in the early 60s, Hunter Thompson did. And then he gets promoted in Rolling Stone and then winds up, he said that he was in the bar at Watergate the night it was broken into. But he's kind of like what Tim Osmond said is MS Plus, you know, where he's that could, you know, control the opposite. I just want to get your take on him, first of all, and then I had another question for you.
Well, I think about Hunter Thompson with respect to gonzo journalism and something like the adrenochrome narrative. I'll get into that. The same way I think, you know, Brian Bennett and Jenna are very much into the history of Ken Kesey and his connection to communitarianism. Mm-hmm. But of course, most people remember Ken Kesey as the Merry Pranksters and the founders of the hippie movement and spreading LSD all over the country. They don't even know what communitarianism is. So with respect to Hunter Thompson, it's always the shallowest aspects of his influence on the culture that I recognize as being the most influential. If you've read any of his novels or his journalistic work. Now, no one would really know or care about Hunter Thompson, who, by the way, we are told blew off his head with a shotgun. When?
That was a pistol, yeah.
Oh, I thought, okay. I thought he used a shot, but he shot himself to death.
You think those ashes were shot off out of a cannon with Johnny Depp and those characters?
Well, that's the thing. Here's where we got to give credit to Hollywood, because no one would know or care. I mean, Hunter Thompson was important in the 60s because we were a literary generation. We still read novels and books.
Right.
And his novels were bestsellers. So his story, well, they weren't even novels. They were autobiographical. But the only reason why this generation, now not you and me, we're both literate, but
right.
The young people coming up would only know who Hunter Thompson was because they saw Johnny Depp playing Hunter Thompson in the movie version. And that's how the adrenochrome story got started. Otherwise, no one would have paid any attention to it. It's a trifling item in in Thompson's novel. But whoever wrote the screenplay for the movie, and any movie Johnny Depp makes is a hit movie. Actually, I think the film version of Fear and Loathing was critically acclaimed, certainly Johnny Depp's performance. But, and it is, if you want to understand a lot of the hallucinogenic insanity of that period, and of course already I think Thompson is writing that in post 1970, 1971, 72. He's more into the early 70s than the late 60s there. But the fact that that episode where he's going insane with hallucinations from the adrenochrome, you know, that's what makes it that's the simulacrum right there. Is it connected to anything real? You know, no, it's probably a complete invention, but you know, I know Tim Osmond would probably say it's a total fabrication and I can't prove it one way or another, but the only reason we even know about it is because it was simulated in a novel and then in a movie, right? So I guess you would call that. Go ahead.
You want to finish your point?
I was going to get into the three orders of the simulacrum. Because that's what we're looking at here. Now, go ahead. Finish it up. I'm getting too intellectual.
Okay, he was interviewed in like 75 or something, University of Georgia. It's on YouTube, to say Hunter Thompson, University of Georgia. And he told the interviewer, you know, when I did Fear and Loathing campaign show and I said that Muskie was an Ibogaine, I didn't know people were taking me seriously, but they did. And they didn't realize it was a put-on. And he admits that there was just a put-on what he was writing. And then the interviewer says to him, oh, so you're kind of like the CIA agent whose legend or cover story becomes their lifestyle. And there's this long pause. I mean, he just this long pause. And he gives this funny look, and then he says, well, I'll give you that. But to me, it revealed that this character is like a persona. You know, these people that are put before us, you know, Abby, you mentioned Webster Tartley, just not to get too far off track, but, you know, he did Masonry last week. Michael Hoffman, you know, he did the Ernst Sundell trial and with James Shelby Downard, Secret Society, Psychological Warfare. Here's a guy who's been at this as long as we have, Ab and Lynn, but yet he still thinks that, like, Las Vegas is real and these other instances, and how can you not know that there's something fishy going on?
Well, this is
the willful ignorance, or they've been told to ignore it. Well, the best way to ignore an inconvenient truth, or the best way to discredit it, is ignore it. You have no argument.
Yeah, because I posted on his Substack. The first time he kind of excoriated me, but the second time, you know, I showed a picture of Aurora where there was no blood. You know, they show the bullet holes that the pictures in evidence at the trial, the bullet holes with the, you know, the markers in the photograph, there's no blood. Well, he just ignored the post. You know, they just ignore it. They don't, like you said, they ignore it. But how can you be a credible researcher if you've done it this long, or like Hunter Thompson, and here he's talking MSM plus stuff?
But we're doing the dirty work of pointing out
how
illogical and inconsistent we're. And that's why people hate it. They can't stand that because they're clinging to these narratives because all they care about is their ideological baggage. They don't care what the truth. They really don't care about truth not in any Socratic or Platonic, not in any sense that relates to the Western philosophical tradition, which starts out with an aspiration to truth, along the way becomes absorbed into a Greek word, science, and then becomes technology, science, engineering, technology, reproducible results, testing hypothesis, rationality. But they don't care about that. They have no commitment to that value system. And people say, well, are they motivated? Well, a lot of it's the grift. It's the money. A lot of them are materially invested in this stuff, you're not going to turn around and say, oh my God, I've been wrong all this time. You know, yeah. And especially these yeah. academics and intellectuals. But for me, I keep returning to the dogs that don't bark in the Sherlock Holmes story. Like, right. come on already. Like, Candace Owens puts out a documentary on the George Floyd event for the Daily Wire. Gets wide circulation. I don't know how many million views. Big hit.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Do you know how many times I've posted those pictures of the young Derek Chauvin and the old Derek Chauvin side by side? Are you going to convince me that Candace Owens hasn't seen that somewhere else? Somewhere? Right. All you got to do is watch mainstream
Plus
media.
They have producers.
Right. They got That's editors. Point, right. right.
It's great.
They don't yeah. do their own research. They're fed stuff.
Yeah. Right. They get writers like Tucker Carlson, those characters.
They
right.
got
yeah,
huge teams, stuff. Man. They're not individuals in any way.
That's
true.
Now I'm a one-man show, and I just rely on emails from various people. I get a couple emails here and there. Nothing significant. Yeah. So I'm on my own. There's no production here. You're wow. seeing it.
Then for the fakeology angle, let me run this by, you know, you had the Masonry show last week, and, you know, Hoffman, and when he was talking about James Shelby Downard, you know, Downard was noted for saying they had these three alchemical acts they want to do, the creation, destruction of primordial matter, and then the killing of the king, and then the making manifest of all that's hidden. And part of that is bringing prima materia, the moon rocks to earth, prima materia to prima terra. Have you heard of that?
Oh.
Let me just make this point you can react to. See, Hoffman, in secret societies, you know,
you're getting into their religion now. You're getting into their religion. Is that right? They're spiritual.
Well, no, here's the point. Here's the point is Downer was unaware of this, but Hoffman would be aware of this. But it's like, okay, how are these alchemists, this religion, these sorcerers, how are they going to bring this about? Let's say, for example, the bomb's a dud and doesn't go off, or that at the killing of the king with JFK, Oswald misses. Or we can't go to the moon. So how do we do this? You know, there goes our religion. Well, if it's just charades and you're doing it in the media through psychological operations, you got nothing to worry about.
Well, this takes
us diving at.
Right. This takes us to the precession of the simulacrum. It takes us
Yeah. That's all that sorcery is that it's a mystical charade, but there's nothing there.
Right. In the end, there's nothing there. In the beginning.
Yeah.
Right. In the first order. Yeah. In the first order of the simulacrum, let me see if I can recount this, because it's a process. And Baudrillard wrote about the fact the first Gulf War, he said, wasn't really a war. You want to talk about a guy who was calling out war as fake. Baudrillard was among the first to do that. But in precession and simulacrum, let me see if I can explain this, because it's kind of strange.
Don't be too long, because we got about 10 minutes left. Okay.
Well, what we're talking, what is a simulacrum or simulac? Yeah, the singular is simulacrum, plural simulacra. It's a copy without an original. Okay. And think about fax machines. The very, very first copy might be pretty good. The second, not as good. The third.
Yeah, they just get worse. It's like broken telephone.
Right. And it's bad simulation. But in the first order of simulacrum, it's a painting, it's a photograph, it's a picture of something, right? Now in the second order, you create a simulation of it from the picture. And Disneyland or Disney World would be a good example of that. You create an alternate fictional environment that's supposed to kind of project a reality, but it's really it's a distorted view of reality. In the third order, you actually kind of twist and pervert the reality, right? That might be like MSM Plus in a way. is the third order. And then in the fourth order, the simulacrum that now exists on its own and bears absolutely no relationship at all to any reality. It's a total fiction, yet it's real, yet it exists as a simulation. And that's probably what this adrenochrome narrative is, or all the things that you're talking about here, Willard, you know, that we're talking about third and fourth order simulacra, because the second order simulacra start to wear out after a while. Like, you know, who goes to Disney World now? I guess people still do, but it gets a little bit run down after a while. You keep replaying the same simulations over and over again. People get bored with it. What we're doing is we're exposing this, and people can't handle it. Their ideological baggage is too heavy. It's a dirty job, and that's why people get upset and angry. We're threatening their livelihood and so forth.
Yeah, their business model.
Their business model.
Yeah, it takes all the fun out of being stressed out because it's just a dumb TV show in the end. I mean, it's just, you know, they're just too invested in it, and they got to keep going with it. Like you said, ideological baggage.
But you got to admit. Yeah. You looked at NASA's budget? It's pretty big. Oh, you want me to talk about the budget for the Key Bridge? I mean, that's the thing I'm getting at.
Oh, I wanted you to talk about it because they just blew the rest of it up off the ship.
Yeah, they did a conventional control demo where you saw and heard the explosions, and then they put that video out. I love that.
And by the way, I've got your forum, Fakeologist Forums post up on here, on the screen here. Baudrillard on the procession of the simulacrum.
Yeah, everybody needs to know that. Yeah,
I got that. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So, you know, Lynn is all over with the forums here. So make sure you visit the fakeologistforums.com and check out her work. I mean, it's
now, I know people are going to be ragging on me because Baudrillard has, like, all these Frenchmen, Lacan, Foucault, Guy Debord. I really like Debord's Society of the Spectacle. I've also published things of that. They're all associated with critical theory. And it's become fashionable now to disrespect critical theory because, I don't know, Foucault was kind of a, I don't think he was a pedophile. He's probably a pederast, but they're not the most reputable characters. And, you know, they're French academics. But that doesn't invalidate what they're writing about.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to stop studying the Frankfurt School just because I know what their agenda was. You know,
you got to pay attention to it.
Right.
Yeah, of course.
So, and this is the problem with our white nationalist comrades over there.
Oh, come on. It's a fake white nationalist. But there's no white nationalist.
Oh, they're not authentic national socialists. I wanted to meet some real ones. Come on.
Although, you know? I wanted to bring up, I'm going to probably try and get Jan Lamprecht on, who lives in South Africa. He's got some pretty interesting stuff about.
Yeah, we're talking about the Broederbund and some of the other.
Who knew? He said, I'm listening to his history. The southern, he calls it Southern Africa because he includes all the countries.
And the idea, the Boers basically wanted the status of an independent tribe, just like the Zulus, you know.
I know,
or the Xhosa.
It sounds like the white colonies were trying to work together
We're talking about the fall of the British Empire because remember. You were asking, how did Harold Macmillan come up with this winds of change business? Well, that gets into the thing that we failed to discuss. We should set up an hour for this.
What is that?
Everybody's so impressed with the Third Reich's conquests in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the Japanese Empire and what they were doing for 10 years before the emergence of the Third Reich, you look at the vast swaths of territory that were conquered by Imperial Japan in the 1930s, their occupation of Manchuria, their takeover of Korea, and ultimately, of course, French Indochina and Malaysia.
So they were going gangbusters.
Yeah, they were establishing their greater East Asian co-prosperity sphere. And the scope and scale of this was so much bigger than the Third Reich. Well, that's what had to kind of drag, become a pretext to get the United States into the war. Because remember, Hitler, even though the United States was supplying the British Empire with all its, I mean, everything it needed to fight the war, Hitler's explicit instructions to his U-boat commanders, personally, he told every one of them, you are not to target or torpedo American shipping. And Hitler's general staff was saying, God, we got to stop this. They're supplying the British. Hitler said, we do not want to give the Americans an excuse to get into the war. But in the meantime, the United States was already virtually at war with Japan as early as 36, 37, when Claire Chennault and the Flying Tigers were running missions for the Chinese nationalist government of Chiang Kai-shek. So what you're really talking about is the failure of the British. We could talk about the collapse of Britain relative to the rise of the Third Reich in Europe. You know, Britain's essentially selling out Czechoslovakia and the failure of the League of Nations. But where it really showed up was in Asia, where the Japanese just rolled right over the British.
I got a map of that. I got a map of that, right?
Right. And so, right.
Here's your Empire of Japan, yeah.
How could the, and then, and think about this, one of the ways the Japanese were selling their greater East Asian co-prosperity sphere was promising independence. They actually got support from Aguinaldo, who was the leader of the Philippine independence movement. He collaborated with the Japanese during the war. Many Filipinos did. Many Asians did. Because the Japanese were promising them independence. After the Japanese came in and said, we're throwing out the British, the European colonialists, the British, the French,
you're
the
right.
Dutch.
That is a whole...
Asia for Asians, you know? Japan Asia was promising. Yes.
That's and a whole having, other show. You're totally right.
Right. And so here come the British and the French after the war. And they think they're just going to turn the clock back to 1939 and go back to when they had these colonial empires. Are you serious? They showed how weak they were.
Mm-hmm.
The Third Reich, but especially Imperial Japan, utterly destroyed the image, the hegemonic image, and probably the real power of the British Empire and the French. It's a subsequent, you know, the French were kicked out of Algeria. They were kicked out of Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia subsequently. And of course, the United States had to step in because otherwise the communists in many cases were moving. See, the people who would not go along with this were the communists, right? They had their own agenda, right?
You got it.
Right.
And listen, Willard, let's say goodbye to Willard. Willard, good
yeah,
call.
Willard, I want to get back into this thing about my problem with Shelby Downard.
Okay, wrap it up.
Right. I like Michael Hoffman a little bit better because Michael Hoffman gets into the organizational aspect of secret societies. The problem with James Shelby Downard is, yeah, I'm sure everything he's saying is accurate. I don't want to get lost down the rabbit hole with the crazy symbolism and obscure crypto-pagan, Luciferian or satanic or New Age symbolism and ritual of these assholes. You know what I'm saying? I could study that. You know, I got morals and dog. You know, don't we get bored with that after a while? I mean, I don't know. You got freedom. The First Amendment, freedom of religion, right?
Yeah. Well, thanks for my call. I'll just to leave you with this is, you know, Downard was the one that mentioned that Kennedy means wounded head.
Yeah, big head or ugly head or fat head. Yeah.
Yeah, ugly. Yeah, you can look it up. Ugly head, wounded head. And he had Rosemary Kennedy with a lobotomy, JFK, RFK shot in the head, Ted Kennedy brain cancer, and RFK Jr. just came out with brain worms.
Oh, good. Did Tim Osmond bring that up?
Yeah, no. Mind virus, mind parasite. Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'll let y'all go.
I know. I like some of the cartoons that's elicited.
Yeah, Willard, send me along any links you think I need to be looking at. Thanks.
Okay.
Lynn at fakeologist.com. LYNN at fakeologist.com. Thanks, Willard.
All right, Adam. You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Always good caller there from Florida. All right, Lynn. Well, you've filled our brains with a lot of stuff you've given us.
Yeah, you and Peter Wright were really discussing the already existing collapse of the British Empire, its credibility, its moral authority worldwide.
Yeah,
they couldn't stand up against the Third Reich, and even more important, they couldn't stand up against Japan and Asia. They just lost it. They lost Malaysia. You know, the Japanese were already establishing contacts with leading figures in the Indian independence movement. There was a division among fighters for independence in India, Nehru and Gandhi and others, and Jinnah, who was the Muslim leader. And the Japanese were openly courting these people and saying, we will break you free of British colonialism and you can establish an independent India and join our greater East Asian co-prosperity sphere.
Wow.
It should be a free trade zone, I guess, manufacturing. And so right. Japan was, and we can get into the trials for alleged war crimes of Japanese war criminals after the war, which were kind of not conducted in the same way as Nuremberg. There's a whole story behind this. A whole story.
Nobody, I've never heard any of that. So but I guess the average American hasn't heard about it either.
Well, it's the dogs. It's like Phil always talks about. Why don't we have photographs from this? Like, where are the newsreels? Like, what's going on here? Why don't we talk about this? Sherlock Holmes and Watson, why didn't those dogs bark? Hey, I'm looking at you, dog. I know what you know. I know your degrees. I know your credentials. I know your friends. I've got years of your work in media or academia or science. Why aren't you barking about this? You know better. It's the dogs that don't bark. And at you, your explanation is they're invested in the lie. They're psychologically invested, emotionally invested. Money. Show me the money.
All right, Lynn. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call tonight. Always interesting.
Dirty job. It's a dirty job, but we got to do it.
And that is faith. No more. Lynn at fakeologist.com. Send her any email link you want. And tomorrow I'm off. And Thursday I'll probably be back with Frank. We may have another guest who has been looking into some of the statistics in and around the United States. His name is Brian. And he emailed me. And I put one of his shows on shorts.fakeologist.com. That's another blog where I just plop some links, and he might be able to come join us. He hasn't responded yet, but he has expressed an interest where he's talking about the vaccines and statistics and sterilization. This might be part of the untold story about the vaccines. Maybe they're just sterilizing people. And of course, if they're young people, they're not going to find out for a few years when they try and make families. But it's been, of course, happening in Africa for a long time. And especially in Muslim nations where they have many children. So they wouldn't really notice either in the same way, because there are many people that are still having big families, but maybe not as big as they used to be. Anyway, it's a whole thing. It's a lot of talk, and it's vaccine related. And we usually get into a bit of that on Thursdays. Okay, so we'll take a day off tomorrow and be back. Lynn, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Have a good night. And thank you for all your links. And don't forget, this is value for value. You pay whatever you think this show is valuable to you. And fakeologist.com/donate. So have a good night, everybody. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. And let me just play a little more for Lynn. She wanted the rest of this song. So we'll play it a little more and then see you around. All right. Take care. Good night.